The Senate Special Committee on World Trade, come to order, please. Members who are here, myself, Stevens Chair, along with Senator Lisa McGuire, Senator Peter Machicki, and Senator Bertha Gardner. My job is done.
Thank you, Senator Stevens, and I'm calling the Economic Trade Tourism Committee in the House to order, and for the record, in attendance are myself, Shelley Hughes, Representative Higgins, Representative Drummond, and Representative Heron, and we may get another one or two, and I'd also like to thank Debbie over to my right, and also Thatcher on my left for their work in assisting us, and and Ginger Blaisdell is my staff. And one of the things we've had a request is please make sure you bring your mic up to your mouth when you speak. And without further delay, we want to get our speakers rolling. We understand we're on a limited time frame. And so we are honored to have the co-chairs of the Alaska Arctic Policy Commission here. I think everyone in the room knows who they are and knows they've been hard at work, and we're excited to hear this report, Senator McGuire and Representative Heron. And then also I might mention to our, those in the room that Nikush Carlo, the executive director of the commission, is here and has made herself available for questions. So at any time, she would be welcome to come to the table. So take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, and to all the members of these two committees. It is, we are proud to deliver to the legislature the preliminary report of the Alaska Arctic Policy Commission, and we're just going to have a prezi to show highlights of our year, this adventure that we started in March and June of last year. But I raised this logo up for really one reason, is that it clearly shows from a polar star view how important Alaska is in the globe and to the United States as being an Arctic state. The country, the United States is the Arctic state, and of course we're a state of the United States, and we are going to play a key role in Arctic policy. And so the picture below the logo shows an Arctic resident looking to the future. And I won't read the letter that's on page 2 and 3, but I would just point to just basically two sentences in 3 that I believe encapsulates what Alaskans should and can do in, because the Arctic is our future. As fellow Alaskans, we know you recognize that with increasing activity in the region comes both risk and opportunity. But we cannot let the perceptions of others determine our future, Alaska's future. And so with that, we ask you that share with us that the legislature needs to appreciate and learn an Arctic understanding.
Excuse me, just for the record, Representative Pruitt has joined us.
Excellent. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Co-Chairman, for inviting us today. And we're really happy to have gavel to gavel here. We did a presentation earlier for a gathering of the Joint State Affairs Committee, of which you, Madam Chairwoman, were a part of that and asked excellent questions. But it wasn't on gavel to gavel, and I'm glad that the public gets an opportunity to join us on this important subject. My co-chairman and I, along with our commissioners, are hoping to make 2014 the year of the Arctic here in Alaska and really push the few Alaskans that aren't completely passionate about the Arctic to that place of passion for us. I really, as you look at the letter, you'll see lots of different ways of thinking about the Arctic. But for me, I see this as our sons and daughters and their children's future. And the idea I've used many times, a couple different ways of thinking about it. If Lewis and Clark were alive today, and I look to our history professor to your right, my feeling is that they would be charting the Arctic. This is that last great unexplored place on the earth, full of mystery and magic and opportunity. And another one that I use is the idea of our race to the moon during the Kennedy administration, and the opportunity that we felt was there to explore space, and we now have that in the Arctic. And of course, we have very similar competitors or partners, however you want to view it, in the Russians, the Chinese, and our Canadian counterparts. So it's with all of that that we ask the public to join us here in the legislature on this journey. You can see when you open up the policy report that there are a lot of hardworking Alaskans that joined us in this endeavor, 26 of us, 10 members of the legislature. I want to say thank you to Senator Gary Stevens, of course, who's here with you, Lyman Hoffman, Kathy Geisel, Donnie Olson. Thank you to Alan Osterman, Beth Cartula, who's now at Stanford continuing her work in a different capacity on the Arctic, Mark Newman, Bryce Edgman, and then all the public subject matter experts are listed in there as well. This, of course, is the preliminary draft recommendations, 16 policy recommendations, 4 vision statements that are contained. AKArctic.com is the website. We invite the public as well as the legislature to go on and read both the summary as well as the 130-page larger report that's been prepared by each of our subcommittees and to give us feedback. The final report is due the 30th of January of 2015, and that document is going to be really important as we prepare, the United States prepares to take the chairmanship of the Arctic Council itself. Currently, our Canadian neighbors are the chairs, so this is Alaska's chance to move forward. Before we go into the Prezi, I just want to make a couple points that we made in the other committee that I think are really valuable. Alaska's chance to define its destiny in this particular area is so important, and I feel like in my 13 years, this is the first chance I've seen us arrive on time. And so that we're not in a position, we talk about federal overreach a lot, and often I feel it becomes a negative subject for us, and people who I'm really fond of working beside as optimists, I see their face sort of turn almost sour, and I understand it, because there's a bit of resentment and sort of anger about this feeling of federal overreach, and part of it is that we're young. We're 54 years as a state, and often we've just come to the table late. In this sense, we can talk about the Arctic and Arctic policy with optimism, because the co-chairman and I, along with our commissioners, we arrived in Washington, D.C. in March of this year, and we figured out that the Obama administration was already on a path to put the federal strategic plan into place by June. And we felt very lucky that we learned that. And so we stepped up our timeline immediately, became more aggressive in our group. And then we opened lines of communication with Brendan Kelly and his peers, invited them. They participated with us in Barrow in a teleconference that was part of the shutdown at that time, and so they weren't able to travel in person, but they participated by phone, and then they participated in person in Unalaska, and we got to know them. We've had weekly meetings with them, and as a result, the federal policy actually got pushed back and was released on the same day as the Alaska policy, and I just really think this is a great example. There are still gaps. I don't want to overpromise and say to you that the federal policy mirrors ours exactly. There are still places where there are gaps, but boy, we've come a long way. And I think that's another thing that Bob and I certainly didn't envision in our mission when we were asked to co-chair this, but that definitely is another role that we took on here with the Alaska Arctic Policy Commission. So we'll go ahead and go through the Prezi, if that's okay, Madam Chair and Mr. Chairman, and then take questions from you. I'll start with the first slide and then let Bob. There are 4 million people in the Arctic, and it's divided roughly in terms of the Russian Arctic, the European Arctic, and the American Arctic. So you can see those numbers there. This way.
So let's go back. Let's go back. Go back.
You want to go back?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, is that, let's see here, get to the right slide. Is you can see this demarcation line, that's the Porcupine-Yukon-Kuskokwim line, and that's the United States definition of the Arctic. The Bering Sea is very important to the Arctic. It's unlike the Barents Sea, which has a huge opening on the other side of the globe. But the demarcation line is interesting from a historical perspective, and my colleagues listened to me on the House floor when I shared this fact that is the Porcupine-Yukon line, the PYK line. President Eisenhower, when we were fighting for statehood, wanted that to be a territory and the rest of the state could be a state. And Wally Hickel, Bob Atwood, and John Butrovich went back to D.C. and talked to, had a meeting with the president in the Oval Office. And Mr. Butrovich proceeded to criticize the president, I guess is a polite way of putting it. And the president got so mad, he turned to Wally Hickel and says, doesn't this guy, he was pointing to John Butrovich, doesn't this guy know that I'm an American? And so what would happen if the president had prevailed? We'd have a totally different state and territory, as you can see. But the Bering Strait is key. The Bering Strait, as you can see, is very key to us. And so the Yukon and the Kuskokwim bisect Alaska. But they're, like the Arctic is the garden for the North Slope and those communities up there. The Bering Sea is a garden to all Alaskans because of these two major rivers that bisect As you can see, in 2013, all these federal reports came out all about the Arctic strategy. And like the senator said, is that we immediately engaged with them, and the implementation plan for the Arctic strategy is came out the same day as our report. And there are, like she said, there are gaps. But we had a teleconference yesterday. We're going to work together, the White House, Brennan Kelly, David Bolton, Eric Cooper, and the commission. We're going to work together and so that we can maintain this good relationship. And then, of course, over here on the left here is the Arctic strategy by the Department of Defense. And that's going to be one of our major focuses, is to rewrite how national security is related to the Arctic, is important to Alaska, and how the state of Alaska and the United States military can work together for a good Arctic strategy. So when it first came out, you can see down there three lines of effort: advance security interests, pursue responsible stewardship, and strengthen international cooperation. But nowhere did it say we're going to have responsible development, so there's sustainable communities, and more importantly, that we're going to utilize the talent that we have in Alaska and to benefit people. That was one thing that was not in the strategy early on. There's no mention of people.
Yeah, and I mentioned this earlier, and sorry to be redundant for Representative Hughes, but it just bears repeating that in our first interface with the strategic team from D.C. in Barrow, I had a copy of the Northern Vision from Canada, and I was comparing it to the draft strategic plan from the White House, and it was just such a stark contrast that every paragraph in the Northern Vision from Canada mentions the people of the North, their economy, their future, how the changing climate has affected their opportunities and their challenges. And in the White House report, it was, again, advancing United States security interests, stewardship of the land itself, whale migration patterns, polar bears, but no interrelationship to the people that live off the land and how they will be influenced in the future as a result of that. And then international cooperation, as if Alaska was not a part of that. So very, very divergent interests, and very different from what our next-door neighbors in Canada were doing. So we were able to point that out, and it was really positively received. Brendan Kelly said, you're right, Senator McGuire, at the federal level, we often forget about the people, the we and people, if you will, and it's something that we need to think about. And so that's been part of that dialogue as we've moved through, and that is our continuing goal at the Alaska Arctic Policy Commission, is to have the people considered throughout.
So
just for clarification, on this slide, the three lines of effort, leave out the people, the economic, the resource development. Was this what they just came out with on January 30th of this month, or this was prior?
No. This
so have they incorporated what they came out with more recently, when yours came out?
Better.
It does address the people and economic development, or is there still a gap? You mentioned there were gaps, so I'm curious. Maybe you'll talk about those gaps later, but I'd like to know what those gaps are.
Yes. And I'd like to, at this time, as of course, we're talking about the implementation plan for the National Strategy for the Arctic Region. So in the implementation plan that came out January 30th is that now they're going to go and what they're calling listening sessions. In fact, there's going to be one next Thursday in Anchorage. Is they're going to come to Alaska, meet with people around the state, and start so they can finalize their implementation plan. So, and this is leading up to their chairmanship, our chairmanship of the Arctic Council. So they're going to do these listening sessions. They're going to figure out what Alaskans think we should do at the Arctic Council when we have the chairmanship. And then this fall, the feds will go indoors. They will talk amongst themselves about what they think a good theme is for running, for being the chairman of the Arctic Council. Then in January through March, they'll negotiate with the other seven Arctic states about what they propose to be their themes. And so the key time for Alaskans to be involved in working and partnering with the feds on Arctic Council chairmanship themes is this spring and this summer. And so we asked them, well, can we get a schedule of those? And what we said this morning in State Affairs, Joint State Affairs, is that we're going to enlist people from the legislature and see if we can get more legislators in attending these listening sessions. And from wherever you live, is that you're going to give your perspective on what the chairmanship themes are for the United States in from 2015 to 2017. And that's key about having this partnership, this dovetailing of our interests with our federal partners.
And Madam Chair, great point. I just want to dovetail onto that to say that one of the things we promised in the Joint State Affairs was that we're going to have our team back here, Jesse Logan, Rob Earl, and Nikush Carlo, put together for lawmakers, one, the schedule this spring and summer of the hearings that will be held so that lawmakers are able to call in or attend in person and testify. Number two, a copy of the current draft of the implementation strategy so that you can see for yourself how our ideas have been incorporated, and then also the draft that they've prepared for us of gaps, so that you can see where we think there are gaps, but then decide for yourself. And then the other document that I talked about, and I want to add one more, I talked about a copy of Canada's Northern Vision. And I think that one is important, particularly because in North America, we're having this joint opportunity for the Arctic Council chairmanship to be back-to-back, so that people can see what's an example of another Arctic nation and how they have approached Arctic strategy that will give lawmakers some kind of an opportunity. And later someone said throw in Norway's because theirs is really good as well.
Okay, thank you. And I do want you to be able to keep going. I want to mention that Representative Tarr has joined us, and we've talked earlier about the vision and the theme that Canada has had and how it's so much in line, and we really like that. Wondering, quick question is, has the Policy Commission made a decision to propose a theme for the 2015-2017 U.S. chairmanship? Are we just feeding lots of ideas, or is there a possibility you might actually draft something you would suggest as a theme?
Well, the executive branch is the point on dealing with the federal government on multiple issues, of course. And so the governor has written a letter to the White House and outlined his priorities related to the Arctic. And so they are going to take those into consideration. As a legislative branch, you know, we should we're going to support the governor, but at the same time, we need to share with our federal counterparts our view of the world. We're not trying to replace the governor, because it's the executive branch is the one, of course, the guys that run the place. And so we're in a supportive role, and we believe that during these listening sessions is that the people that are on the ground will give those the feds quality information that they may have not considered back east.
I'll also just follow up, Madam Chairwoman, by saying that the themes that have come out so far are on page 10 and 11 in the four vision statements and then the 16 policy statements. And I would say that, you know, my co-chairman's right that we have to work alongside the governor, the executive branch, so that we don't communicate inconsistent statements, but that certainly we're used to communicating policy, whether it's on education or public safety or anything else, from both branches of government. And the judicial branch isn't afraid of weighing in themselves. So we know this. We're used to this kind of communication from multiple levels of government. So I think you will see themes communicated. You've seen the draft themes that come out of this particular group already. And I will leave it up to individual lawmakers as they communicate with the team that's coming around. And that's why I want you guys to see how other Arctic nations have approached it, because it may spur you on to think about ideas that you want to communicate as well.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, this slide shows that there are four groups of Alaskans that are permanent participants. They're not just observers. They get to go to all the working group meetings and at the Arctic Council meetings. And, of course, those groups is Inuit Circumpolar Conference, the Arctic Athabaskan Council, the Gwich'in Council International, and the Aleut International Association. So there are Alaskans at the table, both at the Arctic Council level and the working group level. So our first meeting was in Juneau, Senator?
We started out in Juneau, and again, this was when Bob and I got to communicate to the group our more aggressive time schedule. 26 members. I want to say again, thank you. All of their photos and names are here in the front of this book. What a great group of hardworking Alaskans, dedicated from the public, and I think a really good reflection on the legislative branch to have this chance to work close up with members of the public. We divided out into subject matter groups that were led by lawmakers alongside subject matter experts, and you can see that you've got 5 members of the Senate, 5 members of the House, 1 executive branch member by the governor, and then we divided these particular public subject matter experts by areas of expertise. Then we moved on. How the Commission can work for Alaskans. You can see that this was how we started out, and we continue to do this. We're providing a forum for public input on Arctic issues. We're continuing to do that even after this preliminary report. As we work through this next year, we've got our website. We'll continue to hold public meetings. We're setting guiding Arctic policy principles for possible inclusion into state statute, and creating an Arctic policy report to inform public and future policy makers. How we can work with the federal government. And of course, this is something that became a very important part of our mission, more important for, I would say, the co-chairs. DC's far away, and Alaskans needed greater input on Arctic policy. This was one of our most important missions, to work positively to influence federal Arctic policy. We remain concerned always about federal overreach, but we want to point out that the Obama administration has engaged very proactively with us, and we appreciate that. We continue to, we put out a letter of intent. I want to mention this. This is what led into this preliminary report. These were the key assumptions in the 8 areas of consideration that you can see.
And this this slide is, before we go to the text that's in front of the pictures, is that you could see that the upper left is a representation of the values that we hold dear. And what's interesting about this picture, of course, the salmon, the Alaska Native woman, the snow machine, the satellite dish, the blue tarp on the top. This is these are just small symbols of how important Alaska is to us. And then, of course, the one over the coastal scene is we want to ensure safety and security for our state. The lower left is we can do it. We can have a healthy environment and have economic development. And then on the lower right is, of course, Edward in Barrow. And we want there to be transparency in all of our decision-making. But what's interesting about Barrow is that they told us is that the Beaufort and the Chukchi is their garden, and they're really concerned about development. But they realize where development is what sustains them. But what was interesting after that, during that seven-hour meeting, everyone testified to this, literally to this one fact, is that they would prefer that we drain ANWR first before we go into the Chukchi and Beaufort.
It was a nice opportunity for the federal counterparts who were listening to just hear, because the first point that was made over and over by many of the elders was, thank you for coming here and listening first and not just coming in and assuming and starting your meeting. And the idea was that so many people just do that. And then the second point was, we're not saying that we're opposed to drilling in the Chukchi and the Beaufort, but it's interesting that we wouldn't consider drilling and draining the portion of the coastal plain in ANWR first, where we've been doing this kind of exploration successfully for 50 years, where the Arctic is so much more unknown. And it was made over and over by the local people that live there and have the most at stake.
A great view. It shows the Arctic in a perspective, the arc of the globe. And so the Senator has already talked about these strategic recommendations, but each one of these were broken out into teams. And, of course, the Chairman led governance and indigenous perspectives, and all the other members were assigned these specific themes and worked on. And we're very appreciative of what those teams did for us.
And you're all aware of the bigger document. It contains those higher-level reports from each of those groups.
And I touched on it briefly, our Barrow meeting. That was a two-day event. And, to say the least, probably the most well-attended of all of our statewide meetings. And then we traveled down to a community that I represent on Alaska on the chain. And it demonstrated, they demonstrated to all of the visitors that came to Unalaska, is that the Bering Sea is key to the Arctic, and it is key to, of course, the well-being of our state.
Just a point on this one really quickly that I always make. You saw the map that Bob pointed out at the very beginning, the potential for Alaska to have been divided very differently. And so one point we always make, just to keep in the back of your mind, the United States wouldn't be an Arctic nation but for Alaska. And Alaska can't be separated into parts and pieces. We are all an Alaskan Arctic. And the top and the bottom work together, and we're all mutually dependent. And I really think as we move forward, places where there have been divisions between urban and rural communities, I think there's a really strong pathway forward here. For our community, our commission members, this was an eye-opening experience when Unalaska was on the list. And a few of them were sort of saying, okay, we've been in Barrow, we've been in Nome, and those seemed the more obvious. It was great for all of the commission members to really see how interconnected the opening of ice in the Northwest Passage and the Arctic itself, how that is changing the face of all of Alaska. And the fact that now, in this case, the one exploratory well, and I've said this before, so it's a repetition for the co-chairwoman, but is 22 new vessels for just an exploratory well, not full development, and that's not Statoil or ConocoPhillips making their way down through, as Bob and I both always say, the Garden of Alaska, that number one fisheries port on the earth, 709 tons of pollock. And what that does by way of opportunity, but also challenges for that small mayor there, Shirley Marcourt, looking around trying to find a place for these ships to tie up, to fuel, housing. Many of the residents came out just unsolicited to say, I can't afford housing anymore as it is. Where are we going to live? How are we going to afford the kind of boom that comes with these opportunities? If you think back to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. So as policymakers, when you're thinking about the Arctic, it's the entire state, and then it's the mapping of that human footprint and how we manage those opportunities so that the benefits are there for the people.
So, Senator, just to brag a little bit about one of my communities, Unalaska Dutch, it's nearly a billion tons,
yes,
not just tons, of seafood that's processed through that port. But the next two slides, we just wanted to put it in sort of context, is ADAC, of course, is a former Navy base, and that asset is key to the future of the Arctic and Alaska as well. And the next slide, it isn't, this is the Bethel region. It isn't because the co-chair had to have a picture up there. It's all about the Yukon and the Kuskokwim. Those two rivers, again, bisect Alaska. And whatever happens in the Bering Sea is going to affect most of Alaska through its tributaries. This is a picture of Representative Neil Foster's private property, so in Nome. So this, again, is it's about where Nome is and where Point Clarence is. This is probably going to be a key element to our strategies in the Arctic and the infrastructure that we need related to search and rescue and oil pollution for all those innocent passage ships that are going to be going through the Bering Straits, either from Russia or from the Atlantic along the Canadian archipelago.
And another point on this that's nice for lawmakers to think about, we have had appropriate criticism for the federal government in not coming up to the plate when it comes to infrastructure related to the Arctic. We know our federal delegation has put polar class icebreakers on the list for many, many years, and they have not been funded. We've looked at Arctic ports. This is the first place that we've really seen meaningful feasibility studies and movement is in Port Clarence and then along connected to Nome. So we really do believe, the co-chairman and I, that this will be the first place where you're going to see federal investment, and it will be the beginning, if you will, of Arctic infrastructure.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I think that's a good lead into the question that's been in the back of my mind, and that is the question of a deep water port. And when we dismantled our coastal zone management program, one of the arguments and concerns was that under federal law, we cannot get a deep water port permitted unless we have a coastal zone management program. What's the status of that? Has the federal position changed, or is it a concern today?
Sure, it's a concern. Yes.
Have you talked about it when you're in D.C.?
Well, we'll continue to talk about it, but I think that this is a part of how our message, the commission's message to fellow legislators, because this is, you know, we wanted to find out, is we have to understand the Arctic, and that's just one component of understanding the Arctic and how it affects Alaska. Coastal zone management, should we rethink it internally? Probably so. But it's understanding all of us to understand what that component and how it is important to infrastructure and protection of Alaskan shores. I think that's a key element that we continue to talk about, but literally the legislature has to do that internally. We can go back to it if we want to.
Just in follow-up, so am I correct in understanding that the fact that we don't have a coastal zone management program, setting aside the people and the sustaining a way of life and their participation in development programs off our coast, is this something that we have to do in order to get a deep water port? Is that our understanding?
I guess before, I don't want to say something off the cuff, and so We'll have staff, and we'll research that specifically and get it to the both committees.
Thank you.
Could I, Madam Chair, just having sat through a lot of the discussions of the commission, that was a major discussion over coastal zone management, and some of the folks who had been through that battle here in the legislature said, oh my God, we're going to have that battle again, we're not really ready for it. It was a sound trouncing, and those folks who wanted coastal zone management clearly lost. But I've got to say that those who were most interested in revisiting it were the folks who live there, who live in the Arctic, and they're very concerned about it. So I think you're right. It is an issue that deserves to be revisited.
Senator, to be revisited, but I think specifically on the point that Senator Gardner has brought forth is, do we have to? That's what I want clear clarification that I will deliver to both committees. So we went to Fairbanks, and the Fairbanks isn't on the coast. It's technically not in the Arctic, but the University of Alaska Fairbanks is the leading university in the world when it comes to the amount of research they do in the Arctic. Clearly, they're very capable of seeking grant funding, but at the same time, it was clear to us is that though we have really smart people doing Arctic research, the legislature has to recognize it. In our State Affairs Committee meeting, Representative Isaacson shared with us the importance of the Arctic, as well as Senator Coghill and of course Representative Higgins lives in Fairbanks. And so it's a tool that we believe and the commission believes that the legislature needs to continue to invest in.
Great meeting. A couple other points I just want to add to this. One was made by one of my colleagues in the Senate, Senator John Coghill, which was the feedback he got, that it really involved the community and made his constituents much more Arctic aware. And so that's something for us to really think about as we move through our public hearing process, that we expose more communities around the state to what's happening in the Arctic. But two things that came out of it. You can see a reference as we talk about coastal zone management to other models that are out there. And one that we were exposed to in Fairbanks was DEC's Yukon-Koyukuk Tribal Communications Protocol. And that was important to look at how we can, if we don't have coastal zone management, that model specifically, how are other ways that government agencies can communicate with tribal governments and local communities in culturally sensitive ways to look at local knowledge and to look at how things are done. And the other one was suicide prevention. And I really feel that it's important to mention that our commission, as we talk about Arctic policy, we talk about it as an economic opportunity for the state, no question about it. But we also talk about it as a social opportunity for a northern state like ours to understand more about our people. There are things that happen to people who live in northern climates that are different. We have vitamin D deficiencies that lead to diseases like MS in higher numbers, that lead to, even still, diseases like rickets, that lead to suicide rates that are disproportionate to other neighbors that live in southern hemispheres. There are things like alcohol and drug addiction that plague our communities. And these are things that are very important to our particular commission. We want to use this opportunity, and in partnering with our Arctic University, to think about how to make Alaska a better place for people to live.
So I don't know what the timeline is, but on the issue that the senator brought up is very key. One of the gaps in the Arctic Policy Commission preliminary report compared to the implementation plans that the feds have put forth is that we need to go back to work and talk about the issues that the senators articulated.
And I'm going to wrap up and then say goodbye because I have to go speak to the Food Coalition. But what I want to say about the Anchorage work, great recommendation, again, that came from Senator Coghill and Senator Giesel as well. Our December 9th and 10th meeting, it was a work meeting. We knew, Bob and I, that we needed to deliver a really good quality report to you all, that you had tasked us with a job and that it needed to be thorough. And so that was what we did on the 9th and 10th. We actually brought in a facilitator. If you can imagine that we had subject matter experts, in one case someone that was representing environmental groups, NGOs specifically, and in one case pro-development industry. So those thoughts had to come together. And then you had some people, for example, very, very, as Senator Stevens said, strong in the area of coastal zone management and reinstituting that, others that were absolutely against it. So we had 2 days of a work session where we brought all this together in a complex way, 16 policy statements and 4 vision statements that, in my opinion, Madam Chairwoman, reflect the cross-section of this state, and I think they're very good. But if we get the opportunity here coming up in the spring after the session, I'd like us to hold, at their recommendation, public hearings in Anchorage to also raise the level of dialogue up and possibly go down into Seward as well, where many of our Arctic ships come in, and look at highlighting the Arctic. We've got to bring more Alaskans along with us on this particular issue to make it the kind of subject that gets more attention.
Thank you very much, Senator. I just want to say I think it is important, too, for all of Alaska to embrace. Alaska's our home, and Arctic is part of us. And it is, as I mentioned in the earlier, it's the next economic frontier, I believe, for us. And having lived in Fort Yukon and in Bethel, I really see great hope, and I'm very glad that the people are at the forefront in something that we're putting in that gap that the federal policy initially left out, because I do see great hope as we help define the destiny of our state. That, and it will take the entire state being involved, whether it is putting in a port or other infrastructure or resource development, all of the state will be involved. And so I think the public education piece that the Policy Commission is doing is very important. It needs to reach beyond the areas that we would traditionally think that might be interested in. It's something we all need to embrace. And so, and I want to thank you, too, for I was mentioning earlier that had the Policy Commission not been put together a couple of years ago or just a year or so ago, we would have missed the window, and federal policy would have really gone astray. So you mentioned that the timeliness, you weren't a moment too late. And I know there were ones like Wally Hickel before us that were visionaries in this, but you've really carried the torch, and I thank you for that work. And I don't know if there are any final comments, or Rep. Perrin, if you were going to continue on after the senator left.
It's up to the chairs. I can finish it out if you wish.
I think there is a slide or two, and then if there are questions, we do have a few minutes. Do you all have to leave?
Meeting,
okay. So do the House members have a desire to have a little more time, or you feel like you've gotten a good...
I think we're good.
Okay. Well, Representative Drum, if you just want to wait, because I think that you all... are going to need to take off. Is there anything?
Peter.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Herron, I think you mentioned that the policy reports from Canada and Norway are also available on the website.
Yeah, I believe so. Is that correct? Yes. The answer is yes.
Okay, great. And and it was your recommendation that their approach was the kind of approach that we should be taking in this country.
Well, I guess setting Norway aside, these 4 years, it was, you know, Norway, Sweden, Finland, they had 6 consecutive years in a sort of a Scandinavian chairmanship. So they worked together on that. So now it's a North American chairmanship of 4 years. And so... I don't think we should rubber stamp anything that our Canadian counterparts have come up with, but it is a model that we should look at. And what some of the criticism of the national strategy is, it was not about sustainable governments. Specifically, I mean, sure, they generally want to have a good environment up here, But the Canadians was Harper, Prime Minister Harper, and the Arctic Council chair, who's from Nunavut, is they want it to be about the North, about responsible development, about having sustainable economies and communities and having a healthy environment. And so that, when we showed that slide, that wasn't really demonstrated in the national strategy. And so what the legislature wants to do is to let the federal government know that you got to think about that. The people in the northern latitudes are not is not a Coke commercial about bears drinking a beverage. It's much more than that, as you know. And so it's an example that we should learn from and work together about our vision, and then in concert working with the federal government about their vision of what a Arctic Council chairmanship would bring to the Arctic, not to all eight states.
Thank you.
Are there other questions? Do you want to finish up those last couple slides, Representative?
And here's the challenges in the Arctic, of course. Huge differences between resource wealth and community prosperity. We're, you know, a lot of our communities are extremely isolated and remote. Lack of infrastructure, not just ports, but energy, telecommunications. And there's many layers of ownership of the land and resources. And, of course, the Arctic is increasingly active, and it has the world's attention. And so how do we minimize those risks but take full advantage of the opportunities coming our way? And then the role of the Policy Commission is, of course, we delivered this report, and it includes policy that provide framework for states of Alaska's strategy in the Arctic, inform our local, state, federal policymakers, continue to have a conversation with them, and conduct outreach and education activities to profile the Arctic within Alaska. But also, and it's not in there written up there, is many of our southern states are not aware of the Arctic. It's too distant for them, not necessarily physically, but up here in the head. They don't get it. And so that we need to work on that as Alaskans. And let's see here. Oops. All right. And then here's an Arctic package that you've seen that we've introduced coming out of the work of the Arctic. There should be, we think there should be a vehicle that we can leverage private money for infrastructure. A conversation about should we have our own port development authority, so it's looked at in a holistic way rather than the strongest community or the strongest region taking advantage of the need for infrastructure. And then finally, the resolution that says, okay, the State Department is going to select an individual. We just like to be a part of that conversation. But more importantly is that the governor, like I said earlier, has shared his visions of Alaska priorities, and we want that to be a part of the theme of the Arctic Council when we have the chair. And that's it.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just on the legislation, the one bill was introduced last year, so I'm trying to remember how far along things are. And does the ones that were introduced this year, the ones that were introduced this year, Senate Bill 140 and House Bill 288, is that more in line with what you want to do? Does that replace House Bill 165 in any way?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
165 is going to be the vehicle that moves along in the process, and then Senate Bill 140 on the Senate side, and maybe that does make sense to combine them, mm-hmm. but I don't think so at the moment anyway. But House Bill 165 was introduced after our first meeting of the commission. And it was near the end of session, and so I'm working with the Labor and Commerce Chair to have a hearing so we can get that moving along.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very, very much, Representative Herron. Your dedication to this topic, I think, is going to help shape history for our state, and I really appreciate it. and however my committee might be helpful. I one of the things I specifically want to thank you for, and I'll tell Senator McGuire later, but the conversations that you are having at the federal level on a weekly basis are vital, and really appreciate that. If I dread to think of what would be happening if you weren't having those, so I'm very grateful for that. And I just want to mention, before we close out our Thursday meeting, we're going to have Greg Wolf here with the World Trade Center and his presentation to kind of give you a teaser. Three rights, trends driving Alaska's export success. So you can be thinking about what those three rights might be. And with that, I want to thank all of you for wanting to make Alaska be one of the best economic places on the planet. And with that, we will adjourn. Thank you.